Let's consider now those techniques that allow to acquire a frequency or a velocity of a moving object. Two basically approaches can be followed. The first is the counting of the pulses relative to an interval of time fixed and well known. The second is the acquisition of the period of time between two consecutive pulses and the evaluation of the inverse of its proper value. In both cases, the software routine that manages the two approaches will also need to coordinate two sequences of events, those events that are represented by the pulses under measurement and the time events generated by the clock that is used to measure the time. The errors that can be done with such a kind of techniques depend on the intrinsic quantization of the count policy chosen and on the time errors in the representation of the time in the microprocessor. As we will see, these errors can assume different weights on the basis of the techniques that we will use. Let's make some considerations concerning errors. In the following techniques, in the techniques that we will present in the following minutes, we will evaluate errors in terms of absolute value, considering both underestimation of those errors or overestimation of those errors themselves. Generally speaking, we will see cases into which the fork, the range of the maximum and minimum possible errors, is symmetric, but we will see also cases into which this symmetry cannot be assured. The absolute error are typically the dimensions of the measured magnitude. I mean an absolute error on distance, on the measurement of a distance, is expressed in meters or centimeters, and they are calculated as the measured value of that particular physical magnitude minus the true value that the magnitude should assume. The relative measurement errors, instead, are without dimensions, and they are obtained by dividing the absolute errors time by, I mean, the value of the measurement itself. We don't go into more details about the probabilistic distribution of the errors. Simply remember that quantization errors typically are uniformly distributed, while those errors that are due to latencies feature distributions that are very variable considering the applications, and even considering the same application in a dynamic way due to the different conditions into which the elaboration of the CPU can be considered. As we have said, we must detect two kinds of events: external events coming from the transducer, external pulses, the particular case considered, and time events. It is therefore very important to focus the different possible techniques that can be employed to detect such kind of events. First of all, we can acquire the external and time events through a software approach. This means that cyclically, that is with a period called TC, for example, we we acquire the signal status, and comparing the present value with the previous one, we detect the presence or not of a falling or a rising edge. The period TC is, on the other hand, also the maximum latency with which the external events can be detected. The time that we employ to detect the event, that is, to perform the comparison, typically is considered negligible with respect to the periodicity of the acquisition. We will see when this it is completely true, or when instead we have to consider even this time lost in the in performing the overall measurement. The temporal error ET that we make in such a way can be considered as the delay between the occurring of the event and the instant into which it is detected. This time will be included between two limits, two edges, let's say, zero and TC itself. Of course, if the detection is, we are very luckily, contemporaneous to the event, the error is null. Instead, if let's say the previous acquisition, the previous expiration of the period TC has just already passed, we have to wait all the next period before making the acquisition of the status of the signal and to perform the comparison. So the two lower and higher extremities, let's say, limits of the range are 0 and TC. But doing this, we neglected the time granularity of the clock. So we have to include this, and the new edges of the interval are minus temporal granularity and TC, duration of the period itself. Consider that TG, the time granularity, is included with the minus sign, not because we mean that the time is negative. This is not possible. But because we intend to say that due to a certain quantity of error between the internal representation of the time and the real time, the model that the machine follows to represent the time is always with a minimum but existent delay with respect to the real time, the real life. So minus TG. The second method that we can apply to perform the acquisition of the events is through interrupt. This is possible if the signal is connected to a pin of a port of the microprocessor or to a devoted input line of the microprocessor itself. And these pins are configured so as the electronic circuits, when detect a commutation on the signal, will raise up an interrupt request to the microprocessor. Within the response routine, those actions relative to the counting or to the sampling of the signal or of the events are done. And in this case, the time error depends on two components. The first is relative to the latency of the response to the interrupt. That is, not the time lost by the electronic circuits. Instead, the latency due to the fact that the response routine has a certain priority in the scheduling policy of the CPU, and this priority perhaps puts this routine not at the first location of the ready queue of the processes of the tasks that must be executed by the CPU. In other case, the instant of time into which this routine will be executed is not immediate after the detection of the interrupt request. We call this quantity T late, and you see in the slide, I'm talking about the slide 62, latency max, because this quantity is not deterministic, unfortunately, due to the fact that the charge of work, the number of the jobs that a CPU must execute, cannot be foreseen a priori. So we have to be very, very conservative and to include the maximum possible latency that can affect the execution of the routine when it is put at the end, at the tail of the ready queue processes that can be executed by the CPU itself. Moreover, we have to consider a deterministic quantity as a possible source of delay that corresponds to the execution time of the instructions of which the interrupt response routine is made of. We will call this time as TE. So now the range that we will consider and into which the error is included is lower term minus TG, again the granularity of the clock, of the model with which the time is represented inside the machine, plus TE, the execution time of the routine, while the upper term will be TE plus the maximum latency. The final approach with which the events are detected doesn't include any presence of software, but assigns the detection of the events completely to the hardware devices that can be inserted into the general architecture of signal detection. The errors, in particular the time errors relative to these devices, can be considered very neglectable since we are talking about electronic circuits, and in many cases they can be considered basically equal to zero with respect to the values of time we are. So in this case, the interval into which the error is included will have as upper limit zero and as lower limit the granular quantization error of the clock internal to the system, that is minus TG. Consider that since both the two signals that must be acquired, the signal coming from the transducer and the signal coming from the time generation mechanism we have in the system, can be detected with one of the three previously described approaches, we have nine possible combinations. Software interrupt hardware for the pulses of the sensor, and software interrupt hardware for the pulses relative to the time. But in the following, we will see only those very popular and most typically applied by engineers to the typical industrial processes they face with. A further consideration must be done relatively to the fact that with the software or hardware techniques, the detection of the frequency is not instantaneous, but the measurement that we will provide will correspond to the average on a certain interval. Of course, the shorter the interval considered, the better the accuracy of the measurement, that is, the average frequency provided will be very, very closer to the instantaneous one. But in any case, a certain degree of delay in the detection of the measurement is present, and typically this delay is by convention assumed as the half of the acquisition period. Consider also that in the analysis of the implementation techniques that we will present in the following, three significant aspects will be considered and presented for the so-called good design. First of all, the constraints that represent a relationship to be respected concerning the frequencies range that can be measured and the design parameters as frequency of sampling, periods of software cycles, measurement intervals of time, and so on. Second issue that is considered concerns the errors. We will see the possible errors relative to the measurement of the frequency, and we will provide at the end of every technique a range into which of this measurement is included. In other words, we will see that that particular measurement that we say this is the frequency corresponds instead to a range featuring a lower limit and an upper limit 1. And finally, we will provide a set of trade-offs considering the benefits and the drawbacks that every technique will bring with respect to the particular application that we have in mind and that requires the measurement of such a kind of pulses. The first approach that we consider is the measurement of the pulses into a certain and prefixed interval of time delta t. In particular, we made the hypothesis that both the pulses and the time are acquired through software approach, through a routine that basically acquires the content of the bits of a port and checks if the bits have changed their value or not. Pulses, in fact, coming from the sensor, are present onto an input bit of the port, the so-called I bit, and a square wave, whose period is exactly delta t, is perceived on another input bit of the port called t bit. In the slide, the situation is shown, and also basically a pseudocode that describes the main operations of a software routine that periodically is executed. First of all, the routine reads the content of the port, then checks the eventually present raising edge or falling edge into the high beat. If this is the case, the suitable counter is incremented. Otherwise, the routine checks the presence of an edge on the beat that determines the duration of the time interval delta t. If this edge has been detected, the velocity is evaluated as the product of the granularity of the system, of the transducer in particular, times the value of the counter divided by delta t. Moreover, the value of the counter is reset to zero. Just a comment about the multiplications and division. We see that the velocity, the evaluation of the velocity, is inside the routine. This is a potential, a possible choice that not always is made, because basically the value of the counter is multiplied and divided every time by the same quantity. So we could store it into a proper array, for example, every time that the interval termination, that is also the beginning of the next interval, is detected, for eventually multiplying those stored terms outside the routine after the end of the acquisition of the pulses. In particular, this is an important, let's say, attention when we face with microprocessors that are very poor in terms of computational unit. Often we have to use elementary microprocessor just to spare both power consumption and to reduce the dimension of the microprocessor that perhaps must be embedded into a particular process. And in all these cases, the potentialities, the characteristic of the process or the microprocessor are really essential. This, for example, could mean that the floating point unit in the microprocessor is not present, and all the divisions in particular, those in floating point, are executed through a software routine that provides an accurate but approximated value, and in particular that slows down the execution of these instructions, of these operations. For this reason, it could be convenient to perform the division outside the routine just to reduce the duration of the routine itself, since the duration of the routine basically is also the duration of the fastest phenomenon that we can measure with such a software approach. If all those problems do not exist, of course, there is no reason for using these kind of tricks, to make these considerations. This approach basically features some constraints. First of all, we have to observe that the duration of the routine, that is called TC, must be less than the minimum duration of the pulses. And this is clear because if this doesn't happen, clearly we have a problem, because the routine is longer than the phenomenon that we want to measure, and clearly will prevent us from performing a good measurement. It is another way to say what we have observed before, that the duration of the routine is more or less the duration of the fastest phenomenon that we can measure. This constraint implies that the product of the frequency of the phenomenon time the duration of the routine itself must be lower than 1/2. In fact, the minimum pulse duration is half the period of the pulses, and for this reason this means that 2 times the frequency as expressed by the formula corresponds to the minimum pulse duration. Another issue that comes from the general idea on which such a kind of approach is based is that the production frequency of the measurement that is called FP is equal to 1 on delta t. This is evident, this is clear, because delta t is the length of the measurement interval, and only at the end of this interval the measurement will be available. If you go back to slide 61, this concept is clearly evident, because you can appreciate all the red pulses that are counted into the interval delta t, and clearly the final count that will give us an estimation of the velocity will be available at the end of the delta t interval. And finally, the minimum detectable frequency in the phenomenon that we are considering must be greater than 1 divided by delta t. This is very easy to understand, because basically a pulse corresponds to the occurrence of an event in the delta t interval corresponding to the process that we are considering, that we are measuring. If no events take place, clearly the frequency is zero, and the minimum quantity that we can detect, the slowest phenomenon that we can identify, is the phenomenon into which only one pulse in the overall measurement interval occurs. So the minimum frequency is 1 on delta t. On the other hand, we understand that the duration of the routine, of the sampling routine TC, will set a limitation, as we said at the beginning, about the maximum velocity of the phenomenon under measurement. That is, TC must be lower, must be less than 1 divided 2 times the maximum frequency of the pulse train we want to measure. These are the constraints by which the phenomenon is affected, but we have also to consider that in the measurement that we are doing, and in particular into the approach we use for performing such a kind of measurement, we make some errors. The procedure that we are doing, that we are applying to the measurement, is affected by some sources of inaccuracies. Let's see what they are. Two kinds of errors are present in such a kind of measurement. The first affects the counter. We could say that it is relative to the quantization of the counting method that we are applying. The second is related to the measurement time interval delta t. Let's start from this second one. Since there is absolutely no correlation between the delta t duration and the instance of time into which the sampling routine is activated, and since the duration of the routine is not an integer multiple of the overall duration of the measurement. It is uncorrelated, the instant of time into which the routine starts and ends, considering the instance of time into which the interval of the measurement starts and ends. This means that the routine could be called exactly in the moment into which the interval starts, but also it could be called after a certain delay, depending on its length. If the duration of the interval is at a certain moment, and the previous sampling iteration of the routine was immediately before this instant, the new instant into which the routine will be called will be more or less delayed with respect to the beginning of the delta t interval by a quantity that is close to the duration of the sampling routine. And this can happen both at the beginning of the interval time delta t and also at the end. This just to say that by considering the calculations, we always referred to delta t as the real measurement interval duration. But really speaking, the duration of the interval can be shorter or longer due to the previously mentioned source of inaccuracy. In particular, the duration of the measurement interval can be equal to delta t minus the duration of the sampling routine, or can be prolonged by the same quantity. We will define in such a way a new real effective interval into which the counting is done. We call it DTM, and we say that DTM is included into a fork whose lower limit is delta t minus tc and whose upper limit is delta t plus tc. This implies the important property of this method that concerns the correct estimation of the sampling routine duration. Tc can be evaluated on the basis of the number of instructions executed, and considering the clock cycles that every instruction takes to be processed, and multiply the overall sum of all the clock cycles by the working frequency of the microprocessor considered. Better, instead of the working frequency, of course, we mean the inverse of it, the period of the clock with which the microprocessor is synchronized. Just to give an estimation, we can roughly say that the duration of the previous routine is more or less 100 clock cycles, considering all the instructions executed, and the worst case, that if the if part of the code are executed. So for a typical clock cycle equal to 10 nanoseconds, corresponding to a working frequency 100 megahertz, we will have that the duration of the routine is 100 clock cycle time 10 nanoseconds, that is 1 microsecond. This sets the maximum limit, the maximum velocity of the phenomenon that can be acquired and elaborated, more or less close to 1 megahertz. The other source of error that must be taken into account is relative to the counting of the pulses that are evaluated in the real interval DTM. In fact, to the complete asynchronous arrival of the pulses with respect to the beginning of the time measurement and the end of the time measurement delta t, and due also to the complete asynchronous relationship existing between the sampling routine and the arrival of the pulses, again we can say that within the period of sampling we can have a delay between the moment into which the routine detects the arrival of a pulse, but even relatively to the beginning and the ending of the delta t interval, the pulses can be completely uncorrelated. That is, the beginning of the delta t interval corresponds to a certain instant of time, and the rising edge of the pulse that arrives from the sensor has been done immediately before of the moment into which the delta t interval starts. This means that basically that pulse will be not considered in the present interval of measurement. Conversely, we can say instead that the same phenomenon will happen at the end of the interval of measurement delta t. That is, we will have an edge that arrives immediately before the pulse that establishes the end of the delta t interval. This means that that pulse will be included in the present measurement, but consider that that pulse will correspond to a rotation that for the most is outside the interval that we are considering. So this interval, we will have a plus one in the counting of the pulses. The next interval will have a minus one in the counting of the pulses. The present evaluation of the pulses will be overestimated by one, by plus one, we could say. The next counting evaluation will be underestimated of the same quantity. And this is the error, the quantization error on the counting variable that is highlighted in slide 63. So, just to summarize the errors that are present on such a kind of estimation, we will have an interval of measurement that can be a little bit shorter or a little bit longer than the delta t we are considering, and also a number of pulses that are counted that can overestimate or underestimate by one the real number of pulses that are present in the real interval of measurement DTM. This brings us to a formula that expresses the range of frequencies represented by the measurement that we will provide in output to the operator by executing the routine in the microprocessor. The measurement Fm, in fact, will be given by the ratio of the value in the counter divided by delta t. But this is a small wrong evaluation that corresponds to a range of possible frequencies represented by that value. The upper limit of such set of frequencies is obtained by multiplying the frequency under measurement time delta t plus the duration of the sampling routine plus 1 and dividing all this sum by delta t. And instead, the lower limit of this range of frequencies is represented by the multiplication of the frequency that we want to measure time delta t minus tc. This quantity is minus 1, is evaluated by a subtraction with minus 1, and all the resulting term is divided by delta t. Very simple calculations will demonstrate us that the superior limit of the absolute error, that is the difference between the maximum, the upper limit in the previously described fork, and the measured frequency, is 1 plus FTC divided by delta t. Since the absolute error is symmetric, this expression represents also the lower limit of the absolute error, but we have to add a minus sign. And since the relative error corresponds to the absolute error divided by the frequency, we have simply to take these two expressions and divide them by the minimum frequency. Consider that dividing by the minimum frequency, as shown in the slide, corresponds to the worst case for such a kind of software approach. In other words, we are saying that if we want to be, let's say, so precise that our measurement of a frequency, for example, equal to 1 megahertz, is 1% of relative error, we will need to be very slow in the measurement, and the, let's say, slow down factor will correspond to the percentage that we fix. So if we have a 1 megahertz phenomenon, the potential delta t that we need is 1 microseconds. But if we want to be precise, so as the relative error is 1%, that interval will be 100 times larger. So we will need a delta t equal to 100 microseconds to respect the precision that is required. Moreover, considering instead very slow frequencies, for example 10 Hz, we want to measure 10 Hz with a precision that again is 1%. Okay, delta t could be the inverse of 10 Hz, that is 100 milliseconds. But since we have to respect the 1% relative error constraint, we will set delta t 100 times larger than 100 milliseconds, and this implies that we need to wait for 10 seconds to have the measurement. The message is that if we want to be very precise, we must be prepared to have a low production frequency, or in any case to wait the right time to reach the required precision that we want to have.